tried to think of an epitaph for my greatest buddy, and I could only come up with some poem written by the Australian Banjo Patterson, I guess for one of his heroes, as Mikey was mine. He was hard and tough and wiry, just the sort that won't say die. There was courage in his quick, impatient tread, and he bore the badge of gameness in his bright and fiery eye, and the proud and lofty carriage of his head. That was Lieutenant Michael Patrick Murphy, precisely. You can trust me on that. I lived with him, trained with him, fought with him, laughed with him, and damn near died with him. Every word of that poem was inscribed for him. And now they were carrying him past the crowd, past me, and suddenly my senior commanders came over and told me it would be fitting for me to stand right by the ramp. So I moved forward and stood as rigidly to attention as my back would allow. I knelt down by the coffins and said my goodbye to Danny. Then I turned to the one that contained Mikey, and I put my arms around it, and I think I said, "I'm sorry. I'm just so sorry." I talked to the guys again about Axe, and the SEAL Command was not about to leave him up there. They were going in again, this time with more intel, if possible, more searchers, and more local guidance. I suggested they find the village elder from Sabre, if he was still in residence, because he, of all people, could surely lead them to the dead SEAL. I learned right then from the intel guys that the gentleman I referred to was the head man of all of the three villages we had observed. He was a man hugely revered in the Hindu Kush, because this is a culture that does not worship youth and cheap television celebrity. Those tribesmen treasure, above all things, knowledge, experience, and wisdom. A few days later, the same old man, Gularb's father, my protector, walked through the mountains again for maybe 4 or 5 miles. This time he was at the head of an American SEAL team. The elder hardly spoke one word to them, but he walked directly to the exact place where the body of Matthew Gene Axelson was lying. His face had been blasted by close-range gunfire, in that quaint, old-fashioned way the Taliban have when they find a mortally wounded American. Mom predictably broke down at the sight of me. A ton of people were there, from all around the neighborhood, to greet me. I didn't know at the time that these people had formed the bedrock of the 5-day prayer vigil that had taken place on the property while I was missing. A vigil born of pure friendship and concern, which started with such melancholy prophecies of doom and tenuous hopes, but ended on the sunlit uplands of answered prayers. And yet, standing right before me was the cast-iron evidence of the love those Texans must have had for me and for what I'd tried to do on behalf of my country. It came in the form of a brand new stone house, standing across a new paved courtyard, maybe 20 feet from the main house. It was 2 floors high, with a wide timbered upper deck around the bedrooms, which abutted a tall stone-walled shower, custom-made for me. Inside, the house was perfectly decorated, carpeted, and furnished with a big plasma television. "How the hell did that get here?" I asked Mom about the house. And what she then told me blew me away. It started with a visit, after the vigil had ended, from a marvelous Texan landowner called Scott Whitehead. He was just one of so many who came to see my parents and express his delight that I had been found. He'd never, by the way, met any of the family before. And before he went, he explained he had a close friend who owned a construction company in Houston and wondered if there was anything Marcus might like when he came home. Mom explained how I had always wanted a little space of my own. Perhaps a small extension off my lower floor bedroom might be really nice. She was thinking rock bottom price, and maybe she and Dad could manage that. "Next thing that happened," she said, "two of the biggest trucks she'd ever seen came rolling into the drive, accompanied by a crane and a mechanical digger, a couple of architects, site engineers, and God knows what else. Then, Mom says, a team of around 30 guys working 24 hours a day in shifts over 3 days built me a house." Morgan and I moved in, freeing up space for the stream of SEALs who still kept coming to see us. Scott Whitehead's boys had thought of everything. They even had the house phone wired up in my new residence, and the first call I received was a real surprise. I picked it up and a voice said, "Marcus, this is George Bush. I was 41. Jesus, this was the 41st president of the United States. Yes, sir, I replied. I very definitely know exactly who you are. Well, I just called to tell you how proud we all are of you. And my son's real proud. And he wants you to know the United States of America is real proud of you, your gallantry, and your courage under fire. He told me if I needed anything, no matter what, be sure to call me. Then he gave me his phone number. I was thrilled President Bush had called, and I thanked him sincerely. I just told him at the end, anything shakes loose, sir, I'll be sure to call. Yes, sir. By mid-August, still being in the U.S. Navy, I had to go back to Hawaii. During my 2 weeks there, I had a visit from the Chief of Naval Operations, Admiral Mike Mullen, direct from the Pentagon. He asked me to come over to the commanding officer's office and promoted me right there on the spot, made me a petty officer, first class, no bullshit. He's the head of the U.S. Navy, and that was the greatest honor I had ever received. He asked me if there was anything he could do for me. I had with me the Texas patch I'd worn on my chest throughout my service in Afghanistan, fighting the Taliban and Al-Qaeda. This is the patch that bears the Lone Star. It was burned from the blast of that last RPG, and it was still blood-spattered, though I'd tried to get it cleaned. But I'd wrapped it in plastic, and you could see the Star of Texas clearly. And I asked Admiral Mullen if he could give it to the President of the United States. He replied that he most certainly would, and that he believed that President George W. Bush would be honored to have it. Would you like to send a brief letter to the president to accompany the battle patch? Admiral Mullen asked me. But I told him no. I'd be grateful if you'd just give it to him, sir. President Bush is a Texan. He'll understand. Epilogue. Lone Star. On September 13th, 2005, Danny Dietz and Matthew Axelson were awarded the highest honor which either the United States Navy or the Marine Corps can bestow on anyone. The Navy Cross for Combat Heroism. I was summoned to the White House to receive mine on July 18th the following year. I was accompanied by my brothers, Morgan and Scotty, my mom and dad, and my close friend Abby. SEAL Team 5's Commander Lenway and Master Chief Pete Nashik were also there, with Lieutenant Drexler, Admiral McGuire's aide. Attired in full dress blues, my new purple heart pinned on my chest, close to my trident, I walked into the Oval Office. The President of the United States, George W. Bush, stood up to greet me. It's an honor to meet you, sir, I said. And the President gave me that little smile of his, which I took to mean, we're both Texans, right? And he said, a little bit knowingly, it's my pleasure to meet you, son. He looked at the cast on my left wrist, and I told him, I'm just trying to get back into the fight, sir. I shook his hand, and he had a powerful handshake. And he looked me right in the eye with a hard, steady gaze. Last time anyone looked at me like that was Ben Sharmack in Afghanistan, but that was born of hatred. This was a look between comrades. Our handshake was prolonged and, for me, profound. This was my commander-in-chief, and right now I had his total attention, as I would have every time he spoke to me. President Bush does that naturally, speaking as if there's no one else in the room for him. This was one powerful man. I remember I wanted to tell him how all my buddies love him, believe in him, and that we're out there ready to bust our asses for him any time he needs us. But he knows that. He's our guy. Even Shane in his leopard skin coat recognized our CNC as a real dude. President Bush seemed to know what I was thinking, and he slapped me on the shoulder and said, "Thank you, Marcus. I'm proud of you, son." I have no words to describe what that meant to me, how much it all mattered. I came to attention, and Lieutenant Drexler read out my citation. And the President once more came toward me. In his hand he carried the fabled Navy Cross, with its dark blue ribbon that slashed down the center by a white stripe, signifying selflessness. The cross itself features a Navy ship surrounded by a wreath. The President pinned it directly below my trident, and he said again, Marcus, I'm very proud of you, and I really like the seals. Again, I thanked him, and then he saw me glance at his desk, and on it was the battle patch I'd asked Admiral Mullen to present to him. The President grinned and said, Remember this? Yes, sir. Did I ever remember it? I'd hidden that baby in my Afghan trousers just to make sure those Taliban bastards didn't get it, and now here it was again, right on the desk of the President of the United States, the Lone Star of Texas. Battle-worn, but still there.
This has been an Hachette Audio production of Lone Survivor, the eyewitness account of Operation Red Wing and the lost heroes of SEAL Team 10. Written by Marcus Luttrell and Patrick Robinson. And read by Kevin T. Collins. Abridged and directed by Lisa Kahn. Produced by Talking Book Productions. Production supervised by Michelle McGonigal. Lone Survivor is also available in print from Hachette Book Group USA. Text, copyright 2007 by Marcus Luttrell. Audio production, copyright 2007, Hachette Audio, all rights reserved. Except as permitted under the U.S. Copyright Act of 1976, no part of this publication may be reproduced, distributed, or transmitted in any form or by any means, or stored in a database or retrieval system without the written permission of the publisher.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.